Digital Music Trends, Episode 80, 21st of April, 2011. Hello everyone and welcome to the 80th episode of Digital Music Trends. The show has been going officially for 2 years now, so I would like to thank you for your support all this time. I hope you enjoy the long anniversary edition. This week on the show, a quick update from the CEO of MXP4, Alban Servian. They have just launched a new product. Then a lengthy interview with Drew Larner, the CEO of Ardio, where we talk about the company, business model, licenses, and lots more. And finally, an interview with the CEO of GetControl, Nick Holden. GetControl has been just shortlisted for the Music Week Awards in the B2B Digital Service of the Year category. So there's a lot to go through today, and let's get started. So I'm really happy to have on the show today Alban Servian, the CEO of MXP4, with an update on what the company is doing at the moment. So hi, Alban, and thanks for being on the show.
Hi, Andrea. How are you?
Good, thanks. Not bad, and you?
Good.
So basically today, you know, we spoke a few months ago back in January, and you were talking about how MXP4 was changing and you sort of were changing the direction the company was going towards. And, you know, today is sort of the accomplishment of that change because you're launching a brand new product that is going in a different direction from what you were going before. So can you explain what it is and how it works?
Right. It's quite easy. I mean, I think now we have transitioned MXP4 from a pure B2B company to a B2C company. Then on next week, we are going to launch a new, the first social music gaming app on Facebook ever, which is called Bopler Games, B-O-P-L-E-R Games. That's a brand new app available on Facebook, which will allow a music fan to play with their preferred music.
There's a few sides to this new application because on the one side, you're going to have a variety of music on there, but you're also going to have a variety of games. So how do those two sides work?
We used to be a technology company, and we've managed to develop some patented technology to turn any MP3 into a casual music game. The way it works is that we are able to analyze on the fly an MP3 and extract information such as the beat, the chroma, the subsegment, the segment, the harmonies, etc., etc. And we are then able to combine this MP3 with a game, with a casual game, which is developed with our own SDK. And then at the end of the day, imagine you can play with your preferred track with a kind of Space Invader-like, you know, casual game. Then you are able to pick up whatever song you like from the catalog of songs we have licensed from the major publishers and label, and then you can play with it with one of your preferred game. Then we will start with 6 games next week, a very classic, you know, arcade games, and we are currently developing 12 games by the end of June.
It's interesting because Bopler becomes not just a game in itself, but a platform for both the music and the different types of games. And you mentioned also the fact that you have an SDK, which means that external developers will be able to tap into this to develop games for your platform as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Right now, the 6 games which will be available on the platform next week have been developed. 2 of them have been developed internally, and 4 of them have been developed by third-party partners. You know, and these partners have already tested the SDK, and we do intend to launch an SDK in Q2, May or June this year, to allow game developer to build music games upon our technology. Then it's both ways. It's about combining music with as many games as possible on the platform.
Yeah, and what is your relationship with the labels at this point?
I mean, we're getting very positive vibes. I mean, out of the 8 major publishers and record labels in the world, we've managed to sign 4 of them so far. I cannot be so close yet the name, you know, of the publisher and the label, as you can imagine. But I can mention EMI Recording, which is one of the first ones. Then out of the 8 major publishers and labels, we have 4 which are signed already. Then, and progressively, we will ingest, you know, more content on a weekly basis on the platform so that, you know, music fan can play with their preferred track.
Yeah, and the model is pretty much, you know, a freemium model, as has been used, you know, in by a number of other companies on Facebook, using coins and credits. So people will be able to gain access to certain features, but also buy access.
Exactly, that's what we call a freemium model. You're totally right. I mean, think about Farmville or Restaurant City or Mafia World on Facebook. It's a freemium model. Then you are, most of the people would play for free on the platform, and some of them may want to improve their gaming and music experience on the platform. Then there is an ecosystem of virtual goods available on the platform that you can easily purchase with some Facebook credits.
Yeah, and is the experience limited to a desktop, or is it playable on some mobile devices yet?
First, we're starting with Facebook, just because, you know, there are 650 million users on Facebook. One third of them are playing game. I'm sure that a fair share, you know, of these 250 millions of people would play music game.
Yeah.
Then we're starting with Facebook first, and we'll move to mobile later this year.
It's interesting to see that, you know, there isn't actually a platform that allows this kind of thing on Facebook yet. And most of the major players have steered away from music, also because of questions of licensing and all that kind of stuff. So how do you guys feel about being sort of the first major music-based game on Facebook?
Well, I mean, we've tested already a few games with some artists. You know, later this year we discussed together what we've done with David Guetta, Enrique Iglesias, Gerald Cole, Adam Lambert in the US, Duran Duran, etc. And then we've done that, you know, on a B2B basis, you know, for labels, for managers, for some artists. And then we discovered that, you know, traffic was just booming. And in terms of engagement metrics, people were spending like 15 minutes per session playing with a game and sharing with friends. 30% of the people using the app have shared the application with friends. Then we thought it was super amazing. You know, it was a huge metric for us. And that's why we decided to move to a B2C model, because then we started looking at, you know, what Zynga, the Playfish are doing on Facebook. And basically, you know, there are no music games, and these companies are quite successful and say, okay, well, then we have a unique proposition with some unique technology which is patented to deliver a unique social music gaming experience on Facebook. And basically, we knew how to deal with the content owners, both the publishers and the labels. We have a technology background, and we have also a gaming DNA at MXP4. And we decided to combine the three elements into a new platform called Bubble Games.
Well, it sounds like a really exciting new development for the company, and you know, it'll be really cool to see in the next couple of months how things go with the first wave of users taking up with the application.
Yeah, I think that's the first time, you know, for a music fan to not just play the music, but, you know, play with it. I think it's very interesting initially for a lean forward music experience, and I'm super excited about the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to looking at the first results next week.
Cool, thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrea.
I am really happy today to welcome to the show Drew Larner. He is the CEO of Ardeo, and it's a pleasure to have you on. How's it going?
It's going well, thanks for having me.
Ardeo launched in the US and Canada in August 2010, and you offer a streaming music service, but could you briefly outline sort of what the company provides, what the service is, for listeners outside of the US that might not be familiar with the service yet?
Sure. We are an on-demand, unlimited music subscription service, which means that you can listen to basically any track, anywhere, anytime, on multiple devices, wherever you are. Whether you're offline or whether you're online, we provide you with basically the world of music at your fingertips.
The obligatory question is, when you talk about Ardeo, is that a lot of people, when it came out on the media, said, you know, Ardeo beat Spotify to the US market. But the truth is that there is quite a bit of competition already in the States in terms of subscription services, going from Rhapsody to MOG and to even different business models with Pandora, for example. So what sets you guys apart from other services?
I feel like our primary differentiating factor is related to social. And, you know, I acknowledge that social is an overused word, especially these days, given, you know, what's going on in the internet. But when we built the service, the core focus was built around what we call social discovery and the idea of discovering music through people, because we feel that music is such an intrinsically social thing. And the way really we believe that people want to discover music and have always discovered music is from other people. Whether it's, you know, that friend that you had who's, you know, goes out and sees every new band, or someone who's just on top of the new releases, there's always people out there that you look to, you know, find out what's interesting, what's new, what's hip. And we believe we brought that dynamic to the web in a very unique and powerful way, different to what anyone else has done.
One of the things that's really important, aside from the bringing actually the content in, which is already incredibly hard, is also getting people to discover the content that is on the site. And that's one of the hardest parts for subscription services like yourselves. So the social part kind of offers for you a solution to that problem, doesn't it?
I believe it does. I mean, and you make a very good point, because all of these services, and there are competitors out there in this market and other markets, all have, you know, enormous libraries. We're at upwards of 8 million tracks. And it is very challenging when you come and you're faced, as opposed to going to, you know, a situation where you're going to download a particular album and you know what you want. When everything is available to you and always available to you, it can be kind of daunting.
Yeah.
And we feel like with what we've done with this idea of social discovery and following people, it's kind of taken the challenge or the problem of what to play next. We've addressed that really well, because most of the other services are really search and play. You need to know what you want to listen to, and you can kind of come back to the service every day and it looks the same. Whereas with audio, you come back to the service, you know, every hour and it looks different, because you're tuned into this continually updated stream of information, sort of like Twitter meets music, where you're constantly seeing what people are doing on a real-time basis. And we feel that's really a unique and powerful tool.
Yeah, one analogy I thought about was the idea of a flipboard for music, in the sense that it's something that really taps into the social feed of what your friends are doing, what they're listening to. In that sense, how do you construct that social feed? Is it from other RDO users, or do you pull data from other services as well?
It's from other RDO users solely. But the users, it's not necessarily people. You don't have to know people. At the moment, it's all open. So I'm following Joe. I could be following you. I could be following, you know, my brother, but I'm also following, you know, Fader Magazine or KCRW Radio, which is a very, you know, interesting radio station in LA, an NPR affiliate in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
You can create this ecosystem of people and groups. And, you know, we have entertainers on there and musicians. And as I said, it just creates this really powerful feed of information.
Yeah.
That is always updating and always new.
And one of the most important aspects of RDO as a service is that you forewent the free side that a lot of these services are providing, and you actually provide a free trial, but it's all subscription based. What led you to this decision, and how do you think the public is reacting to the idea of not having the free freemium side of the service?
When we started the company and we were working on building a product and getting our deals done, we were very we spent a lot of time analyzing different models, and we came to the conclusion that freemium, at least how it had been done to date, was not a sustainable business model that I certainly, as the CEO of the company, could support with the board and the investors.
Yeah.
It's a great way to get people in the door. People love free music. People love free anything. But in terms of sustaining this business and creating a model that ultimately is successful from a financial standpoint, I didn't feel like creating a freemium model that's advertiser supported, that tries to drive people to subscribe, would, it's just the content costs are too high.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that I think they should be lower. It's just content is valuable.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And providing tons of free music to everyone, I don't think is the solution to building a sustainable business in this space.
And do you believe that this week's announcement that was picked up, you know, everywhere by the media, of Spotify having to cut back the amount of free music that they give to their advertising-based audience, is kind of a sign that this is what's coming, you know, that the free model is not sustainable anymore?
Look, I'm try not to comment on other people's businesses. And,
sure.
And you know, they've done a great job in building an enormous user base and a big company and a successful service. But I think one could reach that conclusion, certainly, that the sustainability of doing what has been done to date with the amount of free that's been offered is just not something that can continue.
Yeah, sure. And in terms of talking about streaming and cloud services, there are a number of lockers being launched at the moment. Amazon did theirs. There's rumors that Apple might launch theirs as well. But do you believe that the idea of a locker and of actually people transferring physically the music that they have from the hard drive onto the cloud is something that is sustainable? Or do you think that in the end, it's all going to come down to a pure streaming service like the one you have?
You know, I think time will tell. Obviously, I mean, sustainable, those companies certainly have the resources to sustain whatever they want.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, will users adopt it? You know, as I said, I think time will tell. I think, you know, we certainly believe that a service like ours, which is obviously has much more functionality, is much more robust, is much more engaging, is something that users will flock to. You know, again, that's my opinion, that's why we're focused on them. We did not choose a locker service, to pursue. So, you know, we obviously believe in the full subscription, full experience, you know, type of model.
Definitely. And in the sense of, you know, the Apple announcements regarding subscriptions, Apple is going to apparently start making it compulsory for companies like yourselves, the subscription companies, to allow users to actually subscribe from within the app, which would allow Apple to take 30% of that charge. So is that something that is worrying you at the moment? Do you think that Apple is going to go ahead with it?
I've spoken about this publicly before. At that rate, it makes it very challenging for us from an economic standpoint to remain in that environment.
Yeah.
And we are, you know, we're analyzing our options. I don't know. I hear lots of rumor about what they're considering and whether they're going to implement it. I read what you read, so I don't have anything, you know, inside specific to add. Only that, yes, it is a problem for us without question. But you know, I would also say, and you know, this has been borne out by, you know, the stats that have been released in the last month. You know, Apple's not the be all end all as far as, you know, platforms. I mean, you look at where Android is going. You know, we've had a lot of uptake on the Android platform. We've built a great Android app. So it doesn't mean that the business is over, but for that particular platform, that fee structure, yes, is problematic for us.
You know, how the company is running at the moment. When you first launched last year, there was a lot of talk about, you know, the services founders and, you know, Janusz Fries and Niklas Stenström, who also started Kazaa and Skype. Are they still really involved in the day-to-day running of the company, or, you know, have they kind of stepped back from the day-to-day operations?
I mean, they were never involved in the day-to-day operations in terms of, you know, they never had executive roles in the company, but obviously they were the founders, you know, the original investors, and they are very involved. I mean, this is not a passive investment for them. I've worked with them for many years now. I've worked with them since 2003, so I've known them for a while. The rest of the executive team, you know, two of our other senior executives came from Skype, Carter Adamson and Malte Sigurdsson. So, you know, they've known Niklas and Janusz for a great deal of time. And so there's a relationship there that's pre-existing. Yeah. And as a result, there's a real, you know, the communication is constantly open. And you know, we all talk to them frequently. So, yes, you know, they're very involved. And it's great because to get the benefit of, you know, their experience and their vision and their direction. And you couldn't ask for anything more.
Yeah,
it's really a great dynamic.
And licensing is certainly you know, an important issue for you guys. Your business model was pretty straightforward, and the fact that you didn't have a free service meant that you probably had a slightly easier ride to actually obtain the licenses for the US than some other services possibly. But in terms of the international expansion and the way independent labels can perceive your service, do you feel that it's going to be an attainable thing to actually expand internationally in a fairly quick way?
I do. I mean, we have designs on being a global service. Obviously, you know, given the experience with Skype, you know, which is a global, you know, worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
we believe that we can attain, you know, that shooting for that is obviously, you know, not realistic given the size of that user base. But, you know, we do have designs on being a global service, and the rights on the record side is not really an issue. You know, we've licensed rights for, you know, international as well. The challenge on the rights side, and it's not insurmountable, it's just time consuming, is kind of winding your way through the maze of the various publishing entities that need to be licensed, or that we need to get licenses from in the various territories, which we're in the process of doing. It's just time consuming. But the deals are there to be made. And we intend to make them and launch. I don't have anything to share, you know, exact in terms of dates, but our intention is to be, you know, available in South America and Asia and Europe.
Yeah. And you mentioned South America and Asia, you know, that there's a lot of the services that are launching right now are concentrating in Europe and North America. But do you see like a big growth market in those other territories that are maybe less explored?
I do. I think, you know, again, every territory is different. You know, different territories within Asia, different connectivity, different desire to pay. But I know this sounds a little, I don't want to say trite, but you know, everybody loves music, and I think if you deliver them a great product that's easy to use, that they can take anywhere with them, that, you know, has great mobile functionality, I think I don't see why the desire to you know, pay a couple of bucks is not going to be there on a global basis.
Looking at the future of this field, do you think that the simplicity of a service like yours that just works may have an advantage over other services that are maybe launched by bigger companies in the future, but that may have a lot of caveats and different tiers and, you know, make it more confusing for the user to actually access to the music? Do you think that you have an advantage in the sense that, you know, that's the fee, you get access to everything, and, you know, that's the deal, basically?
I do. I mean, it's a relatively simple proposition, but I would, you know, I have to acknowledge that part of our challenge right now is user education.
Yeah.
Because most people have not experienced this type of service before. And so it's not an easy elevator pitch in three or, you know, a couple of sentences. You have to kind of explain it and then get people to try it. And once they try it, they're off to the races, and it's you know, they're like, I got it. I don't know how I live without this.
Yeah.
But it's not something that is, at least right now, you know, commonly understood. But I do believe that, you know, subscription music's been around for a long time and it hasn't really taken off. But I do believe that we are at a point where we're close to reaching that tipping point where people all of a sudden just get it, and then the adoption rates will skyrocket.
Yeah. And another way in which you're planning to increase your base is also the fact that you opened up your platform to APIs for outside developers, which is a really interesting strategy. And you've also launched, alongside that, a way for developers to actually get a small revenue share for the users that they sign up through the service they create via the API, which is a really interesting new approach to adding user base and maybe providing a functionality that, you know, you yourselves might not think is, you know, particularly interesting, or you yourself might not have the resources to actually create, but that a third party developer might think, oh, this is great, I think users are really going to like this.
We're really excited about it. It was something that, you know, our guys have been working on, you know, long and hard. And, you know, since we launched the API at South by Southwest, we've gotten great feedback. And you're right, stuff that people are coming up with, we either didn't think about or didn't have time to get to, and we're seeing all this really cool, you know, innovative uses of the API, and we're really excited about, you know, what's going to come from, you know, all these developers kind of taking it to another level. It's been really great.
And finally, to talk about the future of Ardio, we talked about international expansion. Mobile access, naturally, is a paramount feature for the company. And is there any particular feature that you would like Ardio to have, or that you are developing, that you can talk about?
We have a lot on the roadmap, as you can imagine. Yeah. And there's lots of healthy debate internally of what we should work on first.
Yeah.
You know, there's not necessarily features, but the big agenda, and again, this is not unique because other, you know, companies are pursuing the same thing, is pursuing partnerships. And so we're spending a lot of time at the moment working on various partnerships with big distribution companies, you know, whether it be mobile providers or handset manufacturers or ISPs, to really get the service out to a wide number of people. Sure. So a lot of time is being spent on that. We obviously will continue to increase the number of platforms that we're on. I mean, we're currently on, you know, Apple, you know, Android, BlackBerry, Windows 7, but there's more platforms out there, and we want to be, as, you know, we're on Sonos and Roku as well, but we want to be as widely distributed and as widely available as possible. On the feature side, I could get you on the phone with Malta, who's probably better suited to speak to that.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, umpteen amount of things that, you know, we'd like to do. It's just finding the time and prioritizing what needs to come first. Thank you.
Well, it was absolutely great talking to you, and I really look forward to trying out RDO properly when it will launch in the UK.
I'm really happy to have on the show today Nick Holden. He is the CEO of Get Control. So let's talk about Get Control. What is the company all about, and how did you start out?
Okay, Get Control works on a number of different levels. Initially, it's a website for any artist to use. You can build it in around about 15 minutes, and it's free to use. We take care of all the technology, so we've taken all the technical geeky stuff out so artists can just be artists. And then that's based on top of a fan-based management system, so we track all the data that goes on the website. The key part about Get Control is that it's working as a hub. So the idea is that an artist would upload content into it, for instance, a track, and then rather than having to go off to different platforms to do it, we automatically send it to Facebook, to a Facebook tab, to the Facebook wall. We can send the link through to MySpace, through Twitter, and then we can automatically pass it back through into an iPhone app too, and email your fan base as well, all from uploading one piece of content.
And Get Control sort of is the byproduct of a process that you had beforehand. So how did it come about, and what was the background to the company?
Okay, so Get Control was born, if you like, from a product called Fanstar. Fanstar was developed to address the needs of the digital marketplace as it was unfolding. People like Mr. Scruff, Alice Russell, Chris Rea, and Spiral Carpets all used the product. But we found that it wasn't able to keep up with the rapid growth of the internet and new tools that were coming on board. So we developed this product called Get Control. We started Get Control around about 2 years ago, the development, and then we released it for private beta around about February last year, opened it up to everyone else around about May, June time, and now we're pre-launch still, but we've got over 1,000 artists now signed up to use the platform.
And in terms of the way you gather artists, you haven't done any marketing as of yet, so it's all word of mouth. And how does it break down in terms of where the artists come from, and have you seen a particular spike in territories that they may be more interested in this kind of platform?
Yeah, so as you rightly said, we've not done any focused marketing or anything like that, just the tweets that we'd send out and word of mouth through either artists using the platform, managers using the platform, or people who found it and written about us, for instance, Hypebot, Indie Music Finds as well, and quite a few others. The users are spread globally. We found about 40% of them are in the UK at the moment, about 20% are around the Scandinavian countries, and the rest are spread out across the US, Spain, France, Italy, just about everywhere across the world.
And in terms of going into the more detailed sort of features of what you offer on the site, what are for you the main areas that you can help artists with?
Okay, so the thing that we get asked a lot by artists is like, how are you going to make me grow my fan base? And what we're doing is providing you tools to allow you to do that. We can't guarantee that we can wave a magic wand and help you happen. We can't make you write good music, which is the best way to grow your fan base. So what we provide is this really, really simple to use platform that takes care of the key areas like a website. We can put things like forums in there. We've got email systems as well. And we're putting in a blog soon. You know, we keep adding, we've got media players in there. So we've given all the tools that you need to use. Now, we don't think that we're the best at everything that we do. There are other tools out there that are fantastic. And we want to allow artists to use those as well. Hence, we try and use Get Control as a hub. So we push content out. And more companies are allowing people to use their APIs, which allows us to push the content out and pull the data back. So the tools allow artists to efficiently do their online marketing, but you need a strategy behind it. You need to do the work yourself. We can't do it. But then what we're doing is bringing all the data back to make sure that you know you're doing the right thing, is that you're getting the right information from the fans that you're attracting.
And in terms of the tools you provide, there's also, you know, a focus on some premium features that you might introduce in the future, including, you know, iPhone development and that kind of thing. So have you seen a lot of interest from your users in those kind of features?
Yeah, we built the iPhone app, and again, no real big launch, no big shout about it, and people just found it on the website, and we make it really, really simple to do, which is a key part, and it gives you no other platform to manage. So the iPhone app, for instance, you go through the site, you build it, we use the content you've already got, and it takes about a minute and a half to build an iPhone app, and then we submit it to Apple. Once it's approved, you're up and running. But the thing is, all the content then is driven from the website, so there's no need to go off to a separate platform to manage that as well.
Yeah. And in terms of the savviness of the users, because one thing that is interesting is, you know, I work, I've been doing the podcast for ages, and I kind of end up assuming sometimes that people know more than they actually do. How do you find the artists that actually join the platform? Do you think that they're pretty savvy as they come in, or do they need a lot of guidance as to using the social features of the site?
That's a really good question, because somebody asked me this yesterday. So I found that the ones that contact us about certain features or asking for information around the platform, they're the ones that do understand it and want to get on and use it really, really cleverly. But there are people that just want a website and set it up and use it and don't really get the full potential of the marketing capabilities of it. So what we're doing in the back end, we're building a resources section which will help people and show people how you can use Get Control to do certain things. But we're also speaking to bloggers about putting their tips that they use and building a blog category that will say, like, this is how emails should be done, this is how you can market at gigs, etc., etc. So we're using a lot of the resources on the web to help inform the users. Because I found when I was managing a band, if I wanted to try and find anything, it took you half the night to find all the information on the internet. And a lot of it wasn't that useful or relevant to the country I was in. So what we're trying to try and do is streamline that process for the artists using it as well. So the answer to your question is, yeah, I think most artists now understand what they have to do. There's enough content out on the internet to point them in the right direction. It's just getting started and understanding that if something doesn't work, stop it and try something different, because something will work if you use it, it's good enough.
And in terms of the platforms that we're using, I mean, I see over and over again that people are stressing the importance of Facebook for promotion of music. You know, second sort of comes Twitter, and MySpace is coming third at this point. Do you think that's a fair portrayal of how things are working out at the moment?
Yeah, I do. I think that's probably the right order. Facebook is becoming more important to artists because it's so easy to get your likes up, your fans up. The question has to be asked, though, is what's the value of a fan on Facebook versus the value of a fan on Twitter? Or the thing that you didn't mention, which I believe is the most important thing for an artist on the internet, is your own website. You know, that should be the core. That's where, you know, you can really drill down, you can really connect with the fans. You know, you can decide how the website looks, you can decide the content that gets put out there, and you don't get some big fat corporate putting a big advert right across it all the time. You know, you own that site.
And in terms of you know, on the hub that the fans create on your platform, do you have, you know, suggestions as to who do you suggest them to use in terms of actually distributing and selling their music?
No, and that's the other thing that I'm keen to make sure that Get Control doesn't fall into. We don't want to pick a partner that we work with exclusively to use. So we want to try and give artists the freedom to choose whoever they want. And so, for instance, distribution, we'd like to put a link into TuneCore, we'd like to put a link into The Orchard, and, you know, you can just tick any of those buttons and you will then be able to use it. So we don't want to mandate that people use certain labels, certain distribution, you know, anything. We want to give people as much choice as possible on those tools.
And in terms of, you know, the company is based in Leeds at the moment, so how did you find actually setting up a business outside of sort of the main centre that is usually perceived as being London, and, you know, getting developers and all that kind of thing, you know, did you find it quite easy to do?
Yeah, I do. I'm smiling at what you said there, because being a northerner, we try and protect the north quite a lot. Setting up the company from a development point of view is easy, and you know, saying getting developers, there's some really, really great developers up in around Leeds as well, so that hasn't been an issue. It just means that when we meet with the clients, we probably spend a lot more time down in London than we do in Leeds. So at the moment I spend 3 or 4 days a week down in London.
Yeah. In terms of getting clients, are you actually pushing for established artists as well as you know, the growing base of independent artists that you have on the site?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our market is independent artists. It's guys who pick up a guitar and want to make some music and sell it. But it's signed artists as well who are doing their own website management or want to manage their own fan base. But it's labels as well. So we take a hot. So we, you know, a signed artist that recently went along was the Ravenettes. We do the Ravenettes website. That's a well-known, globally known artist that's signed. So we work with people like that. But we're also working and talking to labels about integrating their internal systems into the back end of Get Control to give them a complete view of all the statistics that they have.
And in terms of stats, do you find that people are asking for more and more information, or are they just happy with what you provide them?
No, they always ask for more. Right? And as soon as they get something they haven't had, then they start to think, which is great, and they come and ask us for more. And we then take that feedback that we get from users and build it into Get Control. And we've done that a number of times as we're going along. Again, we haven't got a big enough ego to sit there and go, we've got it right first time, you know. So if anything wants tweaking, we change it, which is what Get Control's all about. It's about being fluid. And if the next big Twitter comes along, we can just hopefully, if the APIs are available, link that in. They do want more statistical information. But my concern was that people just keep asking for data, more and more data, because the data's available now, but then they don't use it. So data is completely useless unless you use it. One of the key drivers of Get Control is that we're now pushing to get that data and automate the use of it. So automate emails that go out, etc., etc., at the right time to the right fans, because we understand the fan base that you've got. We're tracking all the data so we can help you make those decisions.
And in terms of future development for the company, what do you think are the most urgent things that you want to implement on the site, and is there anything that you can talk about that is a sort of a future project that you want to get done?
At the moment the developers are working on completely redoing the music section to link it in with a physical store as well, to make it really, really simple for people to build bundles, build experiences, etc.
In terms of contacts, what is the website and Twitter contacts for you?
Okay, so the website's get-ctrl.com, so getcontrol.com, and our Twitter is @get_ctrl.
Well, it was great having you on the show, and look forward to following Get Control in the future.
That's great, thank you for having me.
Well, that's all for this week. I would like to thank Alban, Drew and Nick for taking part in the show, and I really hope you enjoyed their interviews. As usual, you can keep in touch via the website at www.digitalmusictrends.com. You can also email me on digitalmusictrends@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter on twitter.com/digimusictrends. Have a great week, and till next time. Digital music. Trends. Digital music.